Welcome to Feminist Mormon Housewives. I'm your host, Cammy, and I have with me today Jared Mooney. He has posted a profile on ordainedwomen.org. And if you've been following our Now series, Narrating Ordained Women, his wife was just recently interviewed regarding her profile. And Jared has one as well, so we're going to interview him about why he supports ordination of women. So, Jared, real quickly, would you give us a little bit of background and maybe introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. Danielle and I have known each other for getting close to 5 years, 4.5, 5 years. We've been married for 3. We met in Boston, where we both have lived for the last 8 years or so. We met each other in the singles wards out here and hit it off pretty quickly. Our second date or so, I talked about when I became a feminist. I guess she was impressed by that. Wow. We started dating right away, and we've been married now, I said, for 3 years, and we live in Boston. We have an awesome little puppy, and we're expecting our first child in not too long. She's 30 weeks, so.
You're expecting the baby in a couple months, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a little girl, so excited about that. I'm originally from Arizona. I went to school at BYU. And then I moved out to Boston a couple of years after graduation. I worked for the church's audiovisual department right after graduation for a year or two. And then I came out initially for a job in New York and then moved to Boston.
Well, one question I have, in your introduction, you said you identified yourself as a feminist. Jared, how did you identify yourself as that? It seems unusual to hear that from a man, and I would love to know how you got there.
Sure. About the time that I was in high school, I got involved with debate team and speech and debate, and I really enjoyed it. One of the first topics that we had was about reproductive rights, and my whole family is conservative Republican, and my dad in particular was very conservative. And I think up until that point, I had kind of just mirrored my political views on my parents, right? And the structure of debate is really great. I think more kids should have the experience at a younger age because they make you prepare both sides of the argument. You have to be prepared to argue for what's called the resolution or against the resolution. And this was about reproductive rights. And so I had to do research and get really into both sides of the issue, not just from a research standpoint, but also from a values standpoint, because you had to be able to argue it from a moral standpoint as well. And looking into both sides of the issue, I realized that I was pro-choice.
Really?
And that just made more sense to me. A lot of the literature that I was reading for that that series of debates was feminist literature. And so I had my first exposure to feminist writers and feminist thinking. And I said, you know what, I really agree with pretty much everything that they're saying. Wow. So I guess I'm a feminist.
Wow.
And that happened, like I said, probably my first year of high school. So I've identified, I guess, as a feminist for a long time. And the more that I've learned, the more comfortable I've been with that label and applying that label to myself, which I know isn't really normal for guys, but it's something that when you understand what the word really means, mm-hmm. like I think there are a lot more feminist men out there than they realize.
You know? I agree. Yeah, I agree. I've talked to men who, as the word feminist has been brought up, there's so many negative connotations to it. And as I've understood in the last 2 years what that really means, I have no problem with it. But it's interesting if somebody mentions it in a derogatory way, like a man, I will ask some questions. Well, do you agree with this, this, or this? And they're like, well, yeah. And I said, well, that's feminism. And yeah. It just has a stigma, I think.
That, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's really cool. It takes a lot of maturity, especially in high school, to be objective about an issue as hot as reproductive rights. So that's pretty unique. That's a pretty good way to come at it from looking at it and owning what you think about it at that age. Well, Jared, first of all, tell us when you posted your profile on Ordained Women and what prompted you to do that.
I'm not really exactly sure. I'm guessing it's been up for a little over a year. Yeah, I think it's been up for a little over a year. It's probably, I don't know, probably 5 or 7 months after Danielle posted her profile. I've always had, I guess, I was a little concerned when I first put it up that, like, oh, what will my family think of it? You know, I've always been a little out of step with my family, and I think that they've always sensed that a little bit, that I just think about some of these things differently. But ordination is such a hot button in the church, and it just for so long it was just off the table. It was like, you know, even you could be a feminist in the church, but you know, like, you know, like as long as you didn't like pray to Heavenly Mother or ask for like priesthood, you know, which I think is unfortunate. One of the women that I taught in my mission, was joining the church with a lot of knowledge and a lot of understanding. She was really active on the internet. This is several years ago when the internet was younger, but she knew everything there was to know, you know, good and bad, before she decided to join the church. And she'd been a feminist her whole life, and she asked if it was okay to be a feminist and a Mormon, and I said absolutely. I hope it is, because I've been a Mormon my whole life, and I've been a feminist since high school. And I don't see any inherent conflict in being a feminist. And then she asked the question about ordination, and I said, well, I guess I don't really know why. And, you know, she had brought it up in connection with like blacks in the priesthood as well. And I said, you know, the only thing I've ever been able to tell anybody honestly is that I don't understand the why. There may be an answer to the question, but it's not an answer that I have. And she said, well, ultimately, I don't know that I can be satisfied if that question will never be asked. And I told her that I think that question has been asked by a lot of sincere people, and I hope that the leaders of our church are asking that question with sincerity and with a real desire to know. And I've realized, I guess, in years since, that might have been missionary wishful thinking on my part, and that to some extent, there is prejudice against it that is strong enough that the leaders have essentially said that it's not necessarily out of step with doctrine. I've never read anything of an authoritative statement that I would consider to have taken the issue completely off the table and say that God does not intend women to hold the priesthood. I've never read anything that I feel like met that definition, right? I've always felt like, if anything, it was intentionally left on the table. But in terms of their personal table, I don't think that the leaders of the church are willing to put it out there, which is disappointing. As somebody who believes in Revelation and believes that it's the vitality of this church, and I also believe that the vitality of this church is at risk. I think that when a church starts to lose its younger generation, the hope, the literal hope of their future, is dwindling. And the church is losing a lot of young people right now because they don't feel like there's a place for them in the church, particularly young women. They don't see the opportunities for leadership and for input even. And they get messages, whether they be in the form of modesty rhetoric or, just the young women's curriculum, or their first years in Relief Society, that tell them, not in like explicit language, but in explicit ways, that they are less valued, and that's really discouraging, especially as somebody who's waiting on a newborn daughter. And it's a real worry that I have that she'll grow up in this church and feel like she's not prioritized and feel like she is less valued in the kingdom. Because I don't think that's the case with God, our Heavenly Father and Heavenly Mother. And I don't think that's the case with Jesus Christ. And so, as it, as we come down the hierarchy, it starts at the top, and to deny that there are problems at the top, at this point in my life seems naive. And there's definitely problems on the local levels to one degree or another. We're fortunate to live in Boston and have a really fantastic ward and bishop and people who are sympathetic and empathetic to our needs, people who know that Danielle and I are involved with Ordained Women and who come and ask us questions about it when they have questions. And I think that's really fortunate. But most people, I don't know if it's most people, but I feel like a lot of members of the church are not nearly so fortunate in the situation of their local leadership. And they have people who want to put them in their place. And they want to correct, what they might perceive as a doctrinal misunderstanding instead of understanding why the question's being asked in the first place and what has put the question in people's hearts. And I think it's great. I really am grateful to Kate for putting it out there in such a public way. There's been people who've been willing to ask the question in the past, but nothing that's been so visible and gotten the church's attention like this. And I think the conversations that are happening as a result of it are totally positive. I've even had conversations with my family about it that I feel like have been really positive experiences, even though they may have started with a lot of like trepidation or fear for my soul or whatever, that I wouldn't have had these conversations otherwise, unless this site existed and this movement existed and unless we were a part of it.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I'm very grateful to Kate. She seems, I know there's a lot of women. It takes a bunch of women and men to put this organization together. But her name, she's willing to put out there to be, bashed and everything in order to, take the brunt of it. That takes a strong person. Yeah. No, I'm glad that, that you guys are in a ward like that. And I want to get back to what you see for your daughter, for the future. And so I'm going to come back to that, but I'm curious what you touched on it briefly. You said that, you've had some great conversations. Are those the typical reactions you've had? You've had people in the ward ask you questions and been able to have interesting or productive conversations with people who know about your stance?
Absolutely. So I teach an elders quorum. So I brought it up actually before. We've had several. I think somebody noticed the other day on the internet what I think I noticed is that there's a whole lot of priesthood lessons this year.
Oh, really?
Manuals. Yeah. It seems like more than usual. Hmm. Especially because it's not, it's not even a church history year. Right.
Right.
But we've been talking about priesthood in church a lot. And so inevitably this comes up because it has enough of a social presence, right, that people have noticed it. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And whether I've brought it up or other people have brought it up, I've had a lot of conversations about ordained women in the last year. Not always do people know that I even have a profile, right, when they bring it up. But I've had a lot of conversations. We had really good friends in the ward. They've recently moved to Ohio, but they were encountering some church history things that were giving them questions, and they were beginning, down what we might generally call a faith crisis. Mm-hmm. And that made them take note of a lot more of these contemporary issues in the church. It wasn't what sparked the situation, but, I had a number of conversations with both he and his wife about women's ordination. And it almost happens every time I go to church now. Mm. I've talked to at least a dozen people, on some level or another about women's ordination and the historical stuff around it. Mm. 'Cause a lot of people, say, well, is there anything, like, what's actually, like, what do we know? Like, what's actually written about it? Mm-hmm. And I've looked into that a lot. And so we'll talk about that and talk about some of the precedents in the past or some of the things that indicate that maybe even past dispensations, women had priesthood. Mm-hmm. And talk about how earlier in this dispensation, women had a lot more institutional authority. Mm-hmm. And a lot more individual autonomy in the church than they have now, that we've even regressed, I guess, in terms of how present and involved women can be. Mm-hmm. in a priesthood and religious sphere. Mm-hmm. I guess. And those have been overwhelmingly positive conversations. I had the first conversations with my family around this last conference. They know that Danielle's involved, and they know that I have a profile. And my mom's not really active on the internet, and so the only thing that she really knows is like what my brothers and sisters have told her. And I'm a permablogger. I do a monthly blog on rational faith.
Oh, okay.
And I've addressed ordained women on at least a couple of occasions. And there's my profile. And Danielle is obviously very involved with ordained women. Mm-hmm. She's been at both of the actions, and she's very visual about it, and she's not shy about sharing it. And so mm-hmm. people have, and so like. Certain of my brothers and sisters have taken notice and told my mom, basically this is what Jared and Danielle are involved with. And she brought it up in, I think, the best way possible, where she said, so tell me about this. Like, tell me about ordained women. Mm-hmm. It was just like the best thing you could expect from a parent,
Right.
It, like, not coming out right away with the, we're terrified for you.
Right.
You're criticizing the prophets, you're, speaking evil of the Lord's anointed and all that,
right.
business that we tend to hear. And my mom just said, tell me about this. Mm. Tell me about what your involvement with it is, like what it is, why this is, why they're, you know, trying to get into priesthood session. And I just explained the organization from our own perspective for her. Mm-hmm. And she was very sympathetic. She says, a lot of that makes a lot of sense to me. Mm. You know, she of course was like, I want you to be careful, you know, mm-hmm. You know, that you don't go down the dark road of apostasy or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, but it was sincere, you know, mm-hmm. and she's sincerely in a different place, but she was able to hear, why we're there, mm-hmm. and why we're involved. And I think that it was a really productive conversation. Mm-hmm. And what I ultimately told her is that you can always ask us. You know, I think Danielle's kind of an introvert, and my family has only known her for a little while. And we live in Boston, so far away from them. And so I feel like a lot of my brothers and sisters and my mom don't feel like they know her enough to, like, engage her on these issues without feeling divisive, right? Which is great. I'd rather that than you know, than them calling her out, you know, or being confrontational about it. But I just emphasize that they can ask us, that they can talk to us, and that we'll, you know, that we don't expect them to agree with us. But that if they really want to know, like, where we are, that's something that they can ask, and that we're happy to talk to them and tell them about it and be really upfront about it. And I think that's the biggest thing that's really been beneficial about it, is I can't help but be out in the open, you know, mm-hmm. Because the profile is public, you know, and it's forced me to be more out in the open with my family, mm-hmm. and with my parents. And that thus far hasn't been a negative. I was, mm-hmm. I guess I still worry, mm-hmm. a little bit about what my dad thinks, you know, but this is like my walk with God, and this is my relationship with the church. Mm-hmm. And I think that women need to be ordained. I think that ultimately it will serve the church.
Yeah.
And I think that beyond it serving the church, it will serve women. Mm. And women will be able to just help so much. Like, when I just think about how much more efficiently we could do the work of the kingdom with twice as many hands, and, you know, and even more importantly, I mean, most of the work of the church relies on the faith and the spiritual gifts of its members. Mm. And so the extent to which we can further the work of God with not only twice as many hands, but twice as many spiritual gifts, mm. and twice the substance of faith, if not more, I think is why would we be denying ourselves that opportunity?
Wow. That's a brilliant way of putting it, Jared. And that really went into my last question about the vision you see. And now that you've already spoken to that, can I ask you, what would be the hope or vision that you have for your daughter in the church, if ordination of women was to come to pass? What would you look forward to?
Well, I actually believe in my heart, and I feel like I feel like this is going to happen. I feel like it may not happen. It definitely won't happen as quickly, mm-hmm. as we might hope. But I think that women will find their place in this church, and priesthood isn't something that was all figured out for men. They took a long time to figure out what priesthood meant for them, mm-hmm. and what being a priest was all about in Christ's church. And that's evolved over time. It means different things now than it did in Joseph Smith's time. And, mm-hmm. You know, even during Joseph Smith's, I mean, even the way that priesthood leaders are talking about Keys has evolved drastically over the history of the time of the history of the church, and we've only been around for, you know, 200 years. Right. So I have no doubt that priesthood and our concept of priesthood will evolve to accommodate the ordination of women and women in positions of power and leadership in the church. I don't doubt that that's our future. Mm. And I know that I might be alone in that. I know that Danielle feels that way. We both feel incredibly optimistic about the future, with regard to women's ordination. But what I hope most of all, I guess, for my daughter, since you ask it in those terms, is mm-hmm. that she never go to church and feel less valued mm-hmm. than the boys her age. And we communicate less value in a lot of ways. I mean, little girls pick up on it in primary.
Yeah.
It's you know, the way that we budget differently for the young and men women's programs,
yes,
the way
much,
that
yeah.
we you know prioritize scouting and the way that and just the curriculum, the way that we teach boys, you know, at a certain point we divide the class and we start to teach boys differently than we teach girls.
Yeah.
And you know, we're all youth in the church. And I think having gone through the youth programs, I don't see a reason that it needs to be that way.
Yeah.
I don't think that there would have been, in fact, I think maybe I would have been better served by not having separate young men's and young women's groups, mm-hmm. by just being treated as a youth group.
Yeah.
I hope that my daughter can have a testimony of Jesus Christ and feel really positively, not only about the gospel and the restoration and the Book of Mormon and these things, but also feel positively about her church experience and feel like she can, that she has leaders who look like her, and leaders who have the same experiences as her, because I think that's important. And it's important to have leaders that are different than you as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if your whole experience growing up in the church is one that says, this is not for you, a significant portion of this kingdom doesn't belong to you and you have no place in it. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to not internalize that. And I have no doubt that at home we're going to be able to instill in her a sense of her value.
Mm-hmm.
And that her value is not different from any boys that we may have or any boys out there in the world. But I think the way that the church is now, it would be hard for her not to receive those messages at a young age, and would be hard for her not to internalize them. I mean, it's hard enough in the world. I mean, people have asked Danielle the horrible question that you should never ask somebody who has issues with the church or issues with their testimony or just differences of opinion. You should never say, why don't you leave? Like, that's the worst thing you could ever say to somebody.
I know.
Well,
right?
if you don't agree, then why don't you just leave? And Danielle was asked that by a reporter at the Boston Globe. And what she said, I think, is the best response I've ever heard to it. It's like, well, what am I going to do? Is it any better in the world? Like, I'd be a feminist no matter what environment I'm in. And Mormonism is my faith tradition. It's my home, mm-hmm. spiritually speaking. And, you know, I have to put my house in order. You know, and it's like, if she wasn't involved with the church, there'd still be inequity in the world. There'd still be mistreatment of women, and there'd still be, you know, patriarchy. And so, you know, this is our home front, and this is our battlefront for feminism is here in the church. And we happen to need it more than most. So it's a great place to start.
Well, I'm glad you guys are starting here. You guys bring with it a lot of, from interviewing you and interviewing Danielle, you guys bring a lot to the table with not only this issue, but just church, our church. And it's wonderful that people like you guys are paving a way for people like your daughter to have more enriching experiences. I mean, I remember in the Book of Mormon and even in the things that our prophets have said that, you know, if there are weaknesses, they are weaknesses of men. And I would hope that rather than throw everything out, you would learn from it. Yeah. And that is something that we're trying to do. And I appreciate you taking the time to share that. I think that gives much more opportunities for people. I like the way you said about our spiritual gifts. That is a huge component that we haven't even touched on. And yet it really does bring a lot to the table.
Yeah. So everybody has different gifts. And why reject the gifts of other people in the leadership of the church? We need them all.
Yes. God uses whom he will use.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Jared, for sharing your story with us. And
thank you.
And you have a wonderful day.
All right. Thank you.